CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com. Good morning. It is Monday, the 19th of April. Leanna, you're right. We heard someone fall or something break in the background. Are you okay? And her camera's not on, so I can't even tell if she's all right. Ah, there she is. Ah, are you all right? We heard a bang and a smash. Are you all right?
I forgot that I'd left. Did you hear a bang and a smash?
Yeah, sort of like a thump.
Okay, so this is embarrassing, but this part isn't embarrassing. That I live in an old house that was built nearly 100 years ago.
Yeah,
and it's because of the wooden floors, and it's seen its days.
Yes.
And in the entrance hall where I was now, I have a glass cabinet filled with glass items.
Yeah.
And when you walk across the floorboards, the entire thing rattles. So that's what you heard. And in fact, some of my friends and family refuse to walk past it because they say it makes them feel fat.
Well, listen, in that case, that's not so embarrassing. That's nice. I mean, so you collect these.
So that's all it was.
So what kind of glass things are in there?
I've got some, carafes and bowls and plates and things like that.
Is it sort of, is it crystal stuff? I mean, is it fancy?
No, that's in another cupboard.
Okay.
I've got more fancy things.
You know, since we're talking about collections later on, I think we might have inadvertently stumbled into something that you collect, but we'll talk about that a bit later on. I've got some feedback here. Leanne's east wing on the principal floor. All right, so here are some emails that we've got. This first one's from Carol, who wants to talk about the burning platform last week and said she would have liked to have heard more of what Dumo had to say. Please bring him back and give him more time to speak. And then Claudia says, I'm not sure if you'll get this message or even care. I mean, why start like that, Claudia? But listening to the burning platform last week was frustrating. Dumo had great points to make, and both Gareth and Pumi would not let him finish a single thought. Damon can shout mindlessly for 10 minutes, but when someone has something valid to discuss, they get cut short. Don't think it's intentional, and I'll gladly accept I'm not a broadcaster and I know nothing. I just think it would have been nice to hear the man complete a topic. All right, so Claudia and Carol both saying we needed to give Dumo more time, so we'll get him back, I promise. And I apologize. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you've got things that need saying and you interrupt people, and I sometimes do that too often. So apologies, Claudia and Carol. We can't make everybody happy all the time, but I appreciate the feedback. And then this is from Colette. So Claudia, Carol, Colette, all with C's. Colette says, I've just read your article on Prince Philip, and while all your writings are articulate and considered, this one is really, really cool. You captured the essence of a man and monarchy that are often misunderstood with compassion and sensitivity put into words. What others may disagree with, your morning shows make the start to many people's days so much better, especially the days with Leanne. That's nice, Leanne. Colette also says you need to write a book about your life. So that's very nice.
Yes, we know. Thanks, Colette.
Well, thank you, Colette.
Yeah.
That's very, very nice of you. So some nice feedback there. There are also some more comments about all the Prince Philip stuff over the weekend. So I think we'll probably get one or two more of those in here. Apparently, according to Corona's boring, the Queen only has another 257 years left in her. So we don't have to worry about her going anywhere.
Only.
Well,
yes.
I mean, look at her mother. And obviously their health has been prioritized their whole lives.
Yeah.
And also earlier to your statement, Gareth, about the fact that sometimes if one spouse dies, the other one follows suit quite soon.
Yeah.
I think she's so used to, even though Prince Philip was at her side for so many reasons and in so many ways, she's so used to performing independently.
Yeah.
In her thoughts and her thinking and her ways and her whole life. So I don't see that happening, I must be honest.
You know, it's interesting that maybe she's going to carry on for a while. I mean, she's certainly in great condition for an older lady, and she does have a huge support system, so it's not as if she shouldn't be able to keep going. But it does sometimes happen that when one goes, then the other one goes, you know what, it's time for me to kind of give up. And, you know, I've seen these stories. I mean, my great-grandparents, they were married for a very, very long time. And I think they also just made, I think they either made 80 or 90, but they were up there. And the one went, wow. And literally 2 days later, the other one was gone.
Wow.
So it does happen. But, you know, they lowered Philip into that vault, which Sia was talking about earlier. He thought that was the most moving part of the whole ceremony. Now, he's going to sit there and wait, well, lie there and wait until the Queen dies, until he goes into his permanent storage facility, his permanent...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So storage facility? Can you dignify it differently, please, Gareth?
Well, okay.
Well, it's called a cupboard. So it's called a cupboard.
This is something very, very cool that I can claim a personal knowledge of that I don't think a lot of people have. I've actually been into the Royal Vault, okay, under St. George's Chapel in Windsor.
Wow.
There's a, behind that altar that you saw where all Philip's stuff was, you know, displayed, all of his decorations, behind that there's a little staircase that leads down into the vault underneath St. George's Chapel, because behind St. George's Chapel is another little building called the Albert Memorial Chapel. And underneath that, directly underneath that, is a room of exactly the same size as the Albert Memorial Chapel. It's got shelves, three shelves along the two sides and an altar at the end. And it's got three slabs in the middle. They're just concrete stone, you know, concrete, but covered in York stone slabs. And it's a dark little room. Obviously it's under a, you know, it's in the undercroft of a chapel. So it's deep, it's dark, it's dank, it's cold. And they will put Prince Philip's coffin on one of those slabs for him to wait for the Queen so that they can both be buried together in the King George VI Memorial Chapel, wow, which is off to the side. But in that vault are about, I think, 20 or 30 coffins already of deceased members of the royal family going all the way back to 1804.
Yeah, I think he'll be the 24th.
Yes. That's, yeah, something like that's that. There. But that's not where, what, that's not where he's permanently with, there.
What happens with people who are divorced or who are single at their time of death? Do they just go in alone?
So I know that King George III and his wife, Queen Charlotte, are buried there. And interestingly enough, King George III is our next subject for Blind History, which we launched the fifth season of last week, and he'll be episode 2. So you can hear all about King George III. He's the king who went mad and who also had hundreds of children. Not hundreds, but he had a lot of children. And two of his sons, King George IV and William IV, are buried there as well. But their coffins are just there. They're not in the ground. So they're just on the shelves.
Gareth, would you want to visit it again, or would that be revolting?
Sorry, that took a moment. Leanne,
very good. it's so weird. Like, So I actually saw, like, King George III's coffin. It's been there for 200 years, just sitting there on the shelf. It's kind of strange.
So how do they prevent, you know, odors and things from decomposition?
That's a very good question. I'll tell you how. So Prince Philip was buried in an oak coffin, a coffin of English oak, but it's lined with lead on the inside. It's also why it's so heavy. So it's lined in a thin layer of lead on the inside, and it's actually sealed. The lead lining is sealed. They've buried royals like this for a couple of hundred years now, and they actually seal the lead, so everything is contained in the coffin, no matter what happens to the body in decomposition or anything else. So it's sealed off. It can't be opened. Mm. And usually they used to embalm, you know, like almost mummify dead people, dead royals in those days. But they've done some excavations of royal tombs from, you know, the 13 and 1400s, and they found them very well preserved because of this lead lining on the coffin. So it's all kind of macabre, but it's really interesting to see. And I don't know how many people have been into St. George's Chapel's vault. I don't think they allow many people. And it, certainly no cameras have ever been down there. And you may occasionally see an illustration from the Victorian era of what went on down there. But there was one picture of King Edward VII's coffin when it was waiting down there for his memorial to be built. Really, really interesting stuff. I mean, we're talking about like deep kind of royal arcane knowledge of, you know, stuff that most people probably don't care about. So I hope that's not boring, but I thought it might interest some people.
Incredibly interesting.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know.
You're a bit freaked out, yeah?
Sitting there. Yeah. Okay. But talking about the Queen's state of health a little earlier, perhaps it's because, you know, the British royals aren't as dramatic or into show, like, for example, the White House is. But with the White House and the sitting US president, you often hear about just the preparation and the teams that are around a president. You know, we know that there's almost a makeshift, not even a makeshift, a full-fledged hospital, or at least a doctor's room in the White House, and how you know the health of the president is prioritized so much. You don't really hear much about that with the royals, you know, but I'm sure,
well, you know, that
they're very well taken care of.
You know that when Prince Charles travels, they have blood travel with him. There's actually a couple of bags of blood that go with him in case he needs a blood transfusion of some kind, no matter where he goes. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're totally taking notes, firstly from the funeral and now from these comments. You've faced the screen, but you've written down lead-lined coffin.
Can I put that in my rider when I MC an event now? From now on, if you want to book me to MC your corporate end-of-year function, I need 2 pints of my blood just in case something happens.
Yeah.
I need a lead-lined coffin just in case I die on stage. Ah, fabulous.
No, this is so look, I mean, there's all these weird things that I suppose just because these people have been thought of as more important than the rest of us, that they've developed these ceremonies and these very strange requirements and special protections and special needs that they've built into the monarchy. I don't know how exactly it works, but you can tell it hasn't just happened overnight. And there's constant improvement happening all the time. There are things that they're doing that they've never done before. Philip was a big part of that. I mean, he modernized the monarchy incredibly. You know, brought TV cameras into the coronation, for example. And let me tell you something, if you think a royal funeral is spectacular, in your lifetime and in mine, we will see maybe 1 or 2 coronations. And those are absolutely dazzling. There is probably no other ceremony on earth that can even come close to it. Nothing you've ever seen can prepare you for what you will see when Charles is crowned and later William is crowned. And we may just see both of them because, you know, Charles is, for obvious reasons, going to have a much shorter reign than his mother did. It's quite something. So if you like the pageantry and you like all of that that ceremony, my God, you're in for something really special. Mm. Yeah.
Is there a point where Prince Charles could just not accept the role?
No.
Okay.
Well, he can abdicate. I mean, he could abdicate like Edward VIII, the Duke of Windsor, did. But I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's been preparing his whole life for this. And there's no chance that he's going to abscond from his duties. Plus, that would really put the monarchy in huge disarray. And also, you know, all these people who say, well, the Queen can just pass it on to William. She can't. Even she is not allowed to do that. It has to go through the normal line of primogeniture, which means that Charles becomes King Charles. He may choose the name George, for all we know. It would be strange because he's been called Charles his whole life. But you choose your regnant name. And he'll probably be King Charles III, if that happens. William would be William V.
In front of me.
Yeah. You have what in front of you? Oh, the ruler. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
The rulers of England. Okay.
Sia has his rulers of England ruler. You bought that, didn't you?
Yes, the last.
You bought that at Westminster Abbey, yeah. Or did I give it to you? I can't even remember.
Yeah, bought it there. Mm. And so the last Charles, there was Charles II in 1660.
Right.
Sure.
Good God.
All right. Very good. That's enough of that royal nonsense. We've got lots of other things to talk about this morning, including collections, which we'll get to in a short while. If you want to get hold of us, if you want to send us a message, 079-748-2090, and we can talk about what's been going on. Wow, Bitcoin went from like $63,000 Bitcoin last week, dropped down to $56,000 this week. So the Bitcoin roller coaster continues. And I only mention that because Andre says, I wonder if Prince Philip had bitcoins. I don't think so. But yeah, some good shit there. I had supper last night with my family. It was the first time that it's been, because my brother's wife and his kids are with her dad at the moment. And my sister's boyfriend was busy. So it was for the first time, just us five again, my mom, dad, brother, sister, and I. It was weird. We had dinner last night and we looked around and it was like, this is the first time it's just been the five of us since probably we were all at school.
Wow.
Yeah. It was nice though. I mean, we're lucky we're all still around, right? It was really cool. Yeah. And lovely. My dad decided to do a roast, which he's actually pretty good at. You know, again, cooking is not my strong point at all. I can cook absolutely nothing. I'm useless in the kitchen. We've talked about this a million times. And they gave me a slow cooker for Christmas last year, which was very, really, I mean, like that was optimistic on their part. So I've got the slow cooker and my mom was saying to me last night, oh, she's got the slow cooker, but it doesn't work properly. So I said to her, well, why don't you just take the one back that you
take
gave
back your gift.
Yeah, take back the one that you gave me for Christmas. So she said, oh, but aren't you going to use it? And I looked at her and I said, "What? I mean, do you know anything about me? Really, just, I mean, I love it and a very nice gift and everything, but it's been sitting on my shelf since Christmas and I'm never going to use it. It's almost May and I haven't even turned it on to see how it works. So I think I'm just going to give it back to them.
Yeah, best you do. You can't have old pressure cookers or faulty pressure cookers in the house. If you watch This Is Us, then we know that you can't.
Exactly. I mean, I can't. It's not a pressure cooker. It's a slow cooker. So it's like one of those things that you would make a stew in, I suppose. Right?
Well, yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Is it? You see how little I know? What the hell do I know?
Are you still watching This Is Us?
Yes. I've just watched the first series of the first episode of the new season.
Sure.
That dreadful series now after I've been through it, I think it's dreadful.
Why do you think it's dreadful?
Do you really?
What's wrong with it?
It's too sad.
It's very sad, yeah. Oh. Very heart-wrenching. There was
never an episode that one can watch and you get up and go, oh, that was great. You're always just thinking, oh, life is just horrible. The end is nigh.
Listen to this. Snai, yeah. who's very active this morning, Snai says, I recently moved into a newly built estate. I reported a snag last month and the construction manager came to attend to it. He advised me never to switch my geyser off because it uses up a lot of electricity when it's switched back on to heat the water. Well, I don't know about the specifics of that, Snai, but I do think that our advice last week from Leanne was very helpful. I've actually heard from two people already. In person, not even just on email, two people in person who listen to our show on Friday and are only filling their kettle a little bit now when they boil it, Leanne. So you've really helped us. Look at you. You're like the Isabel Jones of this generation with all of your tips.
Well, in that case, I have another tip, and that's with turning your geyser off.
Okay.
Yes, I agree with you on that, Snae, but the one time that it is important to turn off your geyser is if you have a water cut that lasts for hours and hours or days.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could burn out the element. So keep that in mind. If there is one time to turn it off, it's then.
Leanne is full of useful tips, and she'll continue to do this for us on a weekly basis. It's very good. This is why people love having you on, Leanne. Annette says she agrees with Sia about that This Is Us show. It's awful. And Carl says that This Is Us is becoming like Grey's Anatomy. It should have ended after season two. Too much greed. I suppose that's what the greed is, that they keep making the show because it's obviously making the money.
Yeah. No, I mean, it could be a bit of a stretch right now, but I don't know. I enjoy it.
Tracy's just getting shot, but
too sad.
Tracy wants to correct you, Leanne. A pressure cooker is not the same as a slow cooker.
Yes,
you don't know everything. All right.
I thought maybe a slow cooker used pressure.
Different thing, clearly. All right, and Amy's saying what everyone's thinking. I need to rewatch the stream to get all the good tips. Yes, you do. Absolutely right.
Okay. Pause and take notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Pay attention, for God's sake. I'm very excited about the new season of Blind History. We've received so many very cool comments from people about the first episode, which was Al Capone, featured last week. But while all of that cool stuff is going on, I found this on social media today, and I thought maybe we should advertise it and see if anyone's interested in buying it. Are you ready? Look at this. What do you think?
I am.
Yeah, thought this might be something that you're interested in. Hang on a second. Let me just do this quickly. I need to sort something out here on my screen. Just give me a second.
Oh, okay.
I know it's all very complicated for me. See, let me just try and sort this out.
It's quite an operation.
Yes, I know.
Ooh, it's like flying a plane. How many buttons do you have?
Have a look at that. Ooh. See that?
Okay. Yes. Shall I describe them?
Yeah, go on. Describe it quickly and read what it says. That's useful.
I just need you to remove that comment so I can see underneath.
Okay, let me just take the comment. It's a pair of jeans. So it's a pair of jeans for sale.
A pair of jeans.
Yeah.
They're quite well worn, and they're just showing the back end of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a brown smear in the crack, and it's called lightly shat pants.
Yes,
38 out of 38 and the 34 for $40.
So if anyone's interested,
but listen,
I think those are Sears, aren't they?
The thing is, whoever wore these pants wore them very low, because the lightly shat area is quite high up. It's between the top of the top pockets.
Ew.
Horrible. Terrible stuff.
Get
there we go.
My name out of your mouth.
I'm sorry, Sia, but people are always thinking about that. We're never going to let it go. Sorry, whether you like it or not. All right.
You know, I bumped into someone who listens to the show over the weekend, and I was walking with a gentleman caller. So as soon as I'm so sorry, I didn't even get your name. You probably thought I might have been rude to you, but I thought, knowing our listeners, they'll be like, hey, Sia, well, you know what you did? And I thought, this is not what I need when I walked with a gentleman caller. So I thought, hey, bye.
How did you get out of there? Right. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm very excited about this. We're going to do something new this morning. It's called Collectomania. And many of us suffer from this. I don't think suffer is the right word. Although for people who don't collect, they think it's bizarre when you do. And there are some people who just don't collect anything, right? Some people who just aren't that interested in collections. I mean, I found one or two of them when we were doing research around this. Very rare people, those. But I'm a mad collector of all kinds of things. And if you've ever watched the show or listened to the show, you'll know I collect books, I collect coins, I collect swords, I collect pictures, I collect all
chemicals.
Kinds of things. I've got a periodic table with all the elements on the periodic table. So I'm actually a maniac when it comes to this stuff. So I wouldn't blame anyone for being a little bit put off by me doing that. But I do think I'm in the majority here, because I think everybody has some interest in something, and it is, to me, the most worthwhile way to spend my time and money. And I'm it just gives me such satisfaction. And I think this morning we're going to talk about in our first episode of Collectomania, we're going to talk about the work that Ryle and Alan Demby do, because Alan started the SA Gold Coin Exchange, which I've actually I bought from you guys before at your coin shop. And we're going to find out all about their love of collecting. So first of all, welcome, Alan, and welcome, Rael. Nice to see you both. Very good to see you. Happy to have you on the show. Yeah, how are you?
Thanks for having us. Yeah, all good, thank you. And you?
Good, Alan. So listen, I've got a couple of questions right up front. I just want you to tell us the story of how you started the South African Gold Coin Exchange, because obviously gold is something people have collected for millennia, and we've discussed gold as a store of value on the show many, many times. But it's more than that. I mean, we all know that gold has an inherent value and a preciousness. But you started this business. I mean, there are only certain ways you can actually own gold in South Africa, right?
Well, you can actually own any collectible coin or medallion in South Africa.
Yes.
You weren't able to own cast bars because it's all part of the whole IDB dealing in uncut, unwrought diamonds, unwrought gold.
Right.
So even to this day, you can only have certain types of bars. But in the main in South Africa, coins is the easiest way. And of course, Kruger Rands, which the guys, the Chamber of Mines created in 1967, has been the success story of South Africa. It was rated one of the top 300 brands in the world. And to date, probably 70, 80 million coins have been sold. And probably the most interesting thing is that the Kruger Rand has spawned a whole host of other, I wouldn't say imitators, but coins from other countries around the world that today there are probably 300, 400 million 1 ounce, half quarter, tenth. In other words, fractional Kruger Rands,
right,
in circulation today from America, Canada, England, let's go around the world, China, Austria, Australia, and so on. So it's a huge market, and it's just an easy way to own a coin. It's a 1 ounce gold coin whose price is quoted in the stock exchanges, on the markets around the world, literally from Monday morning in Hong Kong all the way through to Hong Kong on Saturday lunchtime. So
amazing.
For a good 5.5 days a week, there's nonstop trade. It's a very huge market, and that has helped popularize, if you will, coins to the point that it has enhanced coin collecting and taken it to a new level.
Numismatics, right? That's what you call it. So I'm something of a numismatist, and I've actually bought some coins from you guys before because I find that kind of thing really interesting. I've got an old coin collection that my great grandfather started. And there are some really interesting coins in there. But tell me about the SA Gold Coin Exchange, because that was really your baby, and you were ahead of your time in starting that up. And all the coin shops around the country are also your brainchild, are they not?
Well, I was the son of the SA Gold Coin Exchange.
Uh-huh.
Not in the same way that Rael is the son of Scoin, but the Gold Coin Exchange was started in 1972, and I was conscripted to the army in 1977, and I'd been to university to study a BCom, and I was called up to the army for a year initially, but they extended my invitation by 12 months, so I got stuck in the army for 2 years. And while I was in the army, I was always looking to make a few bob because I didn't have any money.
Sure.
A troop in those days, a private to everybody else, was earning about R3.25 a day. So it wasn't really much to buy a McDonald's.
No.
Well, thankfully they didn't have McDonald's in South Africa then. And I was in the army, and I was in chief pay with a couple of guys and auditors. And one day, my colleague said to me, "Should we start dealing in Kruger Rands?" And
yeah.
I said, "Well, what's a Kruger Rand? I've never ever seen one in my life."
Wow.
And he said, "No, there's this coin you can get from the bank, and you can buy and sell. And I said, well, all right, we'll give it a chance. I've always been quite entrepreneurial. I was selling paintings door to door in Pretoria in Sunnyside. I had already had a arranged a show at the Pretoria trade show, agricultural show. So, you know, I needed some money, and you know, we didn't have extra, and that's what I had to do. And I was hustling in those days, and we put an advert in the Pretoria News, and somebody answered and said he had a couple of coins to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So my partner, so to speak, was the money man.
Yeah.
He was the accountant, and I was the front man. You know, I was the lead singer who couldn't sing. I was the lead singer who couldn't sing.
Right.
And so this guy said he had six coins to sell, and it was 500 rand each. We needed 3,000 rand. I had 1,500 rand from my days of wheeling and dealing, part of which was I was a manager of my friend's band in those days called Flash Harry.
Wow, you've done a lot of interesting stuff. My God.
Yeah, yeah. So that was like quite an interesting era in my life. So anyway, we put the 3,000 rand together.
Yeah.
My friend's job was to go to the bank and get a bank guaranteed check.
Mm-hmm.
That alone is a collectible, because nobody even uses bank checks anymore.
Yeah.
And that is part – collecting checks is actually part of numismatics, actually, strangely
really?
Enough. Just as an aside, and collecting banknotes, a American, I think it was a $1,000 bill called a watermelon.
Yes.
It's got a lot of these funny green things in them, is in the 100, so the zeros look like watermelons.
Yeah,
sold for $1 million.
Wow.
A couple of years ago.
I just want to stop you for a second there, because I want to bring Rael in here. Rael, I mean, we've spoken about the coin shops very briefly, but obviously, you know, you must have seen this and thought, how do we make this even easier for people to get involved in? And you know, having been to these shops, it's amazing what you can get now. You guys sell silver Krugerrands, you sell all kinds of precious metals. Tell me about the idea behind that and how that came about.
So I'll speed up the really good story of my father's, is that he wanted gold to be accessible. He wanted people to be able to collect, and you would walk into a shop or an environment that actually feels welcoming, because yeah. Gold coins and any type of gold, it actually seems to be quite overwhelming. So in 1999, I was still just a little boy, and my father was at work, and he started the coin shops. Mm-hmm. And he wanted you to walk into the shop and learn about coins, all types from all over the world. So in his long career of going and meeting with mints from around the world and doing these wonderful deals, he was able to bring in product into South Africa that celebrates milestones and events and historical stories from these mints, the British
yeah,
Royal Mint,
absolutely,
the Mint of Paris. And that's sort of what we try to do, is make it accessible in the shops today. And every day we try to make it more accessible by finding coins. Yeah,
it's a magic thing, because I suppose for people who are collectors, and we were talking about that at the start of this, seeing any place where you can get more collections, where you can get more to add to your collection, is always the most exciting thing for people like me who are obsessed with this stuff. So do you collect anything, Rael?
I do. I like a good it used to be sneakers and cheaper things, but I've always had a bit of an interest in watches. My father, he would bring me back from these coin shows, like
yeah.
some cool fake watches, but then I don't want any fake ones anymore. I like to look for it. And
yeah.
you said something important now, Gareth, is it's all about the chase, really. It's
yeah.
about finding the coin, or finding the watch, or the chemical, or whatever you're looking for.
Sure.
Really, once you have it, you want to find the next thing.
Mm.
It's actually the whole all-encompassing idea of collecting that you're passionate about. And that's what we try to do. The Watchers is a hobby. It's something you can read up about or learn about. And I'm sure as we learn more about the Collectomania program, you're going to see loads of amazing people. The people at the Scoin Shop on the ground have been sending us their collections. Yes. I have guys collecting spiders, baby dolls, really weird, like lifelike baby dolls. Guns and Zippo lighters. The guys have everything, and every one of you, every one of us, really inherently likes to collect.
Well, I mean, this is what I want people to know today. We do want to explain to people where you and your dad and Alan. I'm going to ask you in a second what you collect, but I wanted to let people know what you guys think of collecting, because I think many of us can relate to that. And then we'll get on to what other people do. And you know, if you've got a particularly weird collection of things, then you must please send us an email. I'd love to add you to the show so we can talk about your collections too. So Alan, I know Sia and Leanne collect some things too. We'll come to them in a second, but what do you collect besides obviously coins?
Actually, I'm not really a coin collector. It never really attracted me. I came onto the scene more out of a business approach.
Sure.
And I always think that success in democratizing gold was precisely because I didn't know too much about it. You know, you can always get bogged down in the figures, but I've always collected things and unusual things when I've gone to the coin shows, but I brought one or two things. If we can show your,
of course. Yeah, let's have a look.
Your
what is that?
So in my travels, I came across this coin.
Yeah,
it was made in the I think it's part of the islands near Finland, and it's called Aland, but. Yeah. Okay, this is better. I've taken the plastic off. But Aland is Alan D. So when I saw this, I thought, oh, this is incredible. They actually named a coin after me. or maybe they've named an island after me. So this is like a peculiar thing that I picked up, which I thought was like quite strange.
Yeah.
In my – I couldn't find it, but in my travels at the coin shows, I actually found a pair of – cufflinks in American coin show that were worn by one of the dignitaries at the opening dinner of the President of America. So it's got the American coat of arms on. So that was like quite strange and weird. And then looking around, and this is really the precursor of this whole Scoin idea, was in about the early 19...
Oh, look at that.
I should get out of the way.
No, that's perfect. Just bring it...
Out of the way.
Bring it slightly the other way. There we are. What is that?
Right. That's okay. So in the early 1980s, mid-90s, I was looking to try and create a coin that had a universal appeal to it.
Yeah.
Universal in the sense that it would be easy to make and colorful and fun.
Beautiful.
So you might recall about 20 odd years ago, they had Cow Parade.
So yeah, where we had all those painted cars all over the place, right?
Right. So that started in Zurich in the early 1990s. Business was bad in the city centers, and they tried to jazz it up, and they invited a whole bunch of artists to paint these cows made of fiberglass.
Yeah.
And everybody came up with a new idea, and it started to take traction. It then caught off in South Africa, and after the auction, after the show, they auctioned it off. We bought a few. Mm-hmm. We bought Blow Buller, mm-hmm. We bought Egoli, and a few other cows with funny names. Yeah. And it got me thinking, and we started to put them into our Scoin shops. Then I went overseas. We found out the people who own the intellectual property for this. And to cut a long story short, we bought the rights to Cow Parade around the world. And there have probably been about 10,000 cows that have been made to date. And so we came up with the idea of Skoin. That was the first idea.
Yeah.
And the idea was a colorful coin that would be quick and easy to make. The reverse would have the queen on, as in the from the Perth Mint. And here are two coins that I thought I should bring. The one is New Donna.
Oh, that's so everything brilliant.
Everything had a sort of a... So that was New Donna.
Yeah.
And that this one? Was P. Kausa.
Oh, that's brilliant.
All right.
But that's amazing.
So that the idea was to democratize gold by having colorful, collectible gold coins, and that's how we invented the name Skoin, and then would after be, the Skoin shops.
There would obviously be a limited series of those. So, you know, those are probably all sold, and you can't get them anymore. And if you do, then you're going to have to pay a pretty price more than you did when you made them, right?
Yes, exactly. Amazing. So the mintage was 100 of each, and we made several hundred over the years, and people bought them for fun, for limited edition, for the underlying gold price. And it was just an interesting, unusual, fun, funky way to buy gold. So that was my
contribution. This is precisely what I think makes you guys so interesting, and why I'm so excited to start this discussion. And by the way, we'll be talking to people who collect unbelievably weird things in the next couple of episodes. But while we're on coins, how exactly does Skoin, or the South African Gold Coin Exchange, how do you guys continue? Is it with things like this to innovate, like you've just shown us those ones with the cows on them? I mean, this is a way, Rael, and you could perhaps answer this. This is a way to take coins into the 21st century, right?
Of course. I mean, the mints from around the world just keep growing and changing. And it used to be about historical boring events, but now the British Royal Mint came out with a series of 007 coins, celebrating last year's movie, No Time to Die. But there was no time to launch. It never actually came out. The thing about this coin is maybe it'll be more special and more collectible because of the fact that the event didn't happen. The idea of the Paris Mint, they come out with the most incredibly designed products. There's one gold coin in the shape of an egg. It looks like a fried egg. I think you've got a picture of it. It's incredible.
Let's see if I can find that quickly. Yeah, there we are.
We're innovating ourselves to make it more accessible for you. You can buy online, you can buy with cryptocurrencies, we can store the gold for you. The idea that the mints from around the world keep continuing to innovate and share with these remarkable stories is what we'll show you in weeks
I love
to come
this.
As well.
I mean, so you guys sell these Rock Legends one, which has got David Bowie, Queen, Elton John, and then I saw the 007 ones too, which are incredible. I mean, so you can get these at the Skoin shops.
So we're exclusive distributors of these coins from the world's most prestigious mints. We bring in the best coins that we know our clients want. Mm. Some of them are expensive, but some of them can be reasonable, and it could be a starting point for you to begin collecting. And we'll continue to bring in these beautiful coins, and the mints will continue to be cool and relevant and modern. And coins could be seen as quite like a boring old-fashioned thing, but my objective taking over is to do that, is to make it fun and exciting for more people.
You know, one of the things that makes this so special is if you do collect these coins, these things could be around for thousands of years, not just hundreds, because they're still digging up, you know, these coin hoards from ancient Rome and ancient Egypt, where people used coins that was actual money that they trade with. And because gold is such an inert metal, it just lasts forever. I mean, you know, that you could find something that's been buried for 1,000 years, and if it's made of gold, it doesn't rust, it doesn't decay, it's there forever. I think that if you're going to collect, you may as well start with something that you know is going to last, and that's really special. So I want to ask Sia and Leanne quickly, what do you guys collect? We'll start with you, Leanne. What do you collect?
I started collecting stamps from a very young age, I'd say primary school. And when my great-grandmother died, she had heard the fact that I collected stamps, and two generations before her collected as well. So I inherited her stamp collection and continued to build on it ever since. I mean, whether it holds any value or not is, you know, that remains to be seen. But it was really an exciting part of my life to dedicate time over the weekends. And I even remember the feeling of excitement of putting together album upon album of these stamps. I've since handed them to another family member who just has an amazing interest in looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
So she holds on to them.
You're a philatelist.
Yes.
That's what we call a stamp collector.
I stopped collecting a long time ago, but that was, you know, the biggest collection that I have.
It's amazing. Sia, you like the word philatelist and numismatist. We've learned those two this morning. What are you?
Very fancy. You know, I used to think I didn't collect, but up until you realize, you know, whatever you put a lot of attention to, mm-hmm. and a lot of quirky things that you put together technically do make you a bit of a collector. So I'm thinking about the fact that as a family, we collect a lot of, you know, series or sets of books.
Mm-hmm.
So we have at least about like two or three variations of encyclopedias, just whole set. If someone finds something quirky, we collect that. We have sets of different atlases as well. So we still have that in our study at home. And then personally, well, mine still are very, I'll say, very juvenile collections. But I went through a big Michael Jackson phase, especially when he died. So I have a whole lot of those collections. Yeah. I have all of my Oprah collections as well.
Well, I want to interrupt you because Alan and Rael and everybody else who's listening, you might not know this about Sia, but if you've listened to the show regularly, you would. Like, there was a chance where Sia went on eBay and he could have bought one of the chairs. He could have bought one of the chairs that the audience sat in at the Oprah Winfrey show. And it was going for like a pretty good price. And Sia's such an Oprah fan that he really wanted to buy it. And he thought, I'm not going to get it. And now he regrets
that. I should have.
Yeah.
I kicked myself in the foot because of that.
Yeah,
and then the last random thing that I've realized now in hindsight, I do collect as well, is, you know, with all of my travels, I like souvenirs that I can use. So I started ages ago asking the airline and to get those blankets that they have in the airline. So I now have a set of those, and it tells a story if you use a little blanket and or throw when you remember.
I'm allowed to take those out.
Well, that is why we've had many a conversation and sweeping the air.
Sia's
the
basically,
cabin crew.
I think Rael's implying that you might have actually stolen those, Sia, instead of just collecting them.
I am not implicating myself. It is through asking. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, there are lots and lots of comments here. I mean, Snae says, who's been very busy this morning, I collect souvenirs from all the countries I've been to. I mean, a lot of people like to do that because then you get home and you've got something to remind you of your trips. People are big into silver at the moment. Just quickly, before we let you guys go, the silver price has actually gone up recently, but silver is a nice thing to collect too because it has utility as well as just being a store of value. And silver is, you know, one of the precious metals that you sell. So how does silver compare to gold in terms of sales?
Well, I think they say silver is the poor man's gold. But silver has been as old as the hills. Probably the first coins were actually made of silver.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, of the top 10 most valuable coins in the world, half a dozen of them are actually silver coins. A nickel, an American nickel recently sold for about $10 million.
Yeah.
And the first silver dollar sold for roughly that as well. So I think that silver, as you say, was more often used in trade. People had more access to silver than ever before. And as you say, people just use it for money, use it for trade. And along the way, they just accumulated these coins. And it just has a certain appeal, particularly in Europe. Europeans don't have the same amount of, say, spare cash, if you will, as perhaps the Yanks. And they just like silver coins. You know, silver has... Yeah. has been around for a long, long time. So they tend to like silver coins.
Yeah.
Having said that, the Americans are huge collectors of silver coins. I would say that the Europeans and the Americans are the biggest collectors of silver. You know, from an investment pricing point of view, silver used to be $5 an ounce. It ramped up to $50 an ounce in the early 80s when the two Hunt brothers, who were oil billionaires, tried to corner the market. And shortly thereafter, the market collapsed and it went to a few dollars an ounce. So silver has been out of favor for a long, long time, but it's recently pushed up to about $25, $30 an ounce. So
yeah.
It is more affordable, and people like the idea. I think what has changed is that it sounds rather sort of silly, but the mints have put together a box, if you will, of 500 silver coins.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just easy, and it's very heavy metal. And so the specific gravity is very high. So this is something for you, Gareth.
Yeah.
The specific gravity is very high. And so it's easy to buy a 500 coin box of coins. So you're finding a lot of sort of investors, if you will, coming into the market.
And just buying
a
whole bunch.
It's easy to buy this and put it in your safe or in your...
Well, I'll show you. I'll show you what I bought from you guys not so long ago. Here's a silver Kruger Rand, which I got from your Squint shop. Yeah, this is magnificent. Was that
from which year is that?
2017.
Yeah, so in 2017, the South African Mint brought out the 50th anniversary of the first Kruger Rand.
Right.
And the coins all have got mint marks on it. So if you see on the back, there's like a little hologram.
There's the front and there's the back. And I put it back in the plastic now, but there's Paul Kruger. And it says South Africa, and it's got the date here, and it says 2017.
Right. So,
It and was don't first... take it out of the plastic. Again.
I know. I just took it out to show you.
Keep it careful.
Yeah. Because silver, of course, tarnishes. It's not as resilient as gold is, right? Yeah.
Yes.
But sometimes when it tarnishes, it creates a huge, like, rainbow feel, and it gives a lot of eye appeal. But that takes. That takes about 100 years. So the South African Mint brought out the 50th anniversary of the Kruger Rand, the most popular and best-selling coin in the world. Hmm. And those coins had those holograms on them. They were minted in uncirculated, you know, that you could put in your pocket, but also as proof collectibles, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium from 1 ounce right down to 1/50th ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So it created new collectors. So when we spoke about what mints do, mints generally are making new product in, for instance, like 3D coins, coins with musical notes in them.
Amazing.
Hologram color coins.
That's phenomenal.
Strange coins, Batman coins. But what we do is we creating new distribution channels and new ways to open up the way you can buy.
Guys, I could talk to you about this all day, but we're already out of time, and I'm excited that we've started this, but this is by no means the end. So Alan and Rael, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there for this morning, but this is a great place to start, and we will be collector maniaing for the next couple of weeks, and you can find out more about any of the stuff we discussed this morning by going to the page on cliffcentral.com, and we want to hear about your collections. It might be stuff like Sia says that's juvenile, might be stuff that's really valuable. I love that we're starting with coins because it's something I care about, and we will check in with Alan and Rael every now and then, but we mostly want to hear from you about what you're doing, and thank you both for being on the show this morning.
Thank you so
much. Guys.
Great to see you guys. Thank you. Yeah, well, let's find out what everyone's collecting. Thank you, Rael and Alan. and they are the South African Gold Coin Exchange. And we'll tell you more about that in the forthcoming weeks. How cool is that, huh? I like my little silver coin.
Gareth, you'll need to break down eventually what all your collections are. We'd love to know.
Yeah, I'll tell you about mine. But I come from a family of collectors. I mean, I'll tell you what my sister collects in a forthcoming episode, and it's going to surprise you. And my brother, even more weird. So we all have different things. I think we're all collector maniacs. All right, everybody, that's all we got time for this morning. But thank you for being part of the show. Thank you for joining us this Monday, and I hope you have an awesome week. We will keep you company tomorrow from 6 a.m., bright and early. Have a good week. CliffCentral.com